Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast, your source for policy rants and raves from Tech Freedom, your Washington, D.C. advocate for the freedom to tinker and innovate. I'm Evan Schwartztrauber, your host. On today's show, DraftKings, FanDuel, and the wonderful world of fantasy sports. Joining me in our D.C. studio to talk about all of that is Chris Koopman, a research fellow at the Mercatus Center, a university-based research center. Chris, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So, Chris, to start, what is fantasy sports? We're not talking about Quidditch, right?
No, this is not fantasy sports in the idea that the sports don't exist. This is fantasy sports in the idea that these are games where participants assemble teams made up of real-life players. And the winner of these fantasy games are the teams that do the best with regard to their players in real-life sports. So to give you an example, let's say fantasy football. Fantasy football, if you and I were in a league together, we would be competing based on the players we select and how well those players do in their respective games.
So a lot of our listeners are probably familiar with fantasy sports in that, you know, they have a friend or a family member who's in an office pool and they all compete amongst themselves. But how is, you know, your family fantasy pool different than DraftKings or FanDuel, which is daily fantasy sports?
Yeah, so fantasy sports for most of its existence has been season-long fantasy. The idea being that a group of maybe 10, 12 of us would get together at the beginning of a season. We would all draft teams. That is, we would have a fixed pool of players, and we would all draft and select players out of that pool. And then we would compete against one another throughout the entire season. And success or failure in that league would be based on how well your teams do each week. And the winner would be determined at the end of this season, much like any other sports league. However, in the past 7 years, daily fantasy sports has come up. And it's essentially a much faster version of season-long fantasy sports games, insofar as the league lasts typically 1, 2, maybe 3 days, and then a whole new league starts over again. And there are other wrinkles and differences between season-long and daily fantasy sports that we can get into, but that's the big difference, is that traditional fantasy sports lasts for an entire season, and daily fantasy sports, as the name suggests, lasts a day.
Yeah, and it seems like one of the biggest appeals of daily fantasy sports, and you see this on the advertisements, is that it doesn't require a season-long commitment. So if you're one of those people like me who ends up drafting a crappy team and my entire season is ruined, I can actually start over every week and have a different team each week.
Exactly. Or let's say you enjoy playing fantasy sports, but you don't want to play for the entirety of a Major League Baseball season, you know, 160-some-odd games, depending on how long your season lasts, or to play fantasy basketball. An NBA season goes from October until June. So that requires a lot of commitment over time to stay involved in a fantasy league that stretches almost 9-10 months. Now, daily fantasy sports allows you to play a weekend, to play a couple weeks, to play when you feel like playing or when you want to actually watch some games. And it requires very little, if no real commitment. You play a game and then you stop playing when that game's ended, and maybe you play another game, or maybe you don't. It allows you much more flexibility with regard to how you want to play your daily fantasy games.
So FanDuel and DraftKings were founded in 2009 and 2012 respectively, but they really started to take off more recently, it seems. Over Thanksgiving, a lot of Americans were watching football and they noticed a barrage of advertising from these two sites. And it seems like 2015 was really the year that they blew up, and maybe 2016 will continue that trend. Do you have a sense of why all of a sudden this has become such a controversial issue?
Yeah, so you are correct. FanDuel, for example, was founded in July of 2009, I believe. But people didn't really start hearing about them until really July 2015. The fantasy sports really took off the tail end of 2014, the calendar year of 2014, and became really popular specifically because of advertising deals that they made with networks like ESPN that put them in the face or in front of people watching games every single week. And I think it will continue to grow, even with all of the controversy that surrounded daily fantasy sports over the last 6 months. The number of people who are playing daily fantasy sports games continues to climb. And I think a lot of the controversy surrounding daily fantasy sports, although we can talk later about the insider trading allegations and some of the other consumer protection arguments that are being made to regulate daily fantasy sports. But in a nutshell, the controversy surrounding daily fantasy sports has been they've gotten so big so fast that in particular, state regulators, state attorneys general, and state gaming board officials have more or less gone into a panic trying to figure out what do we do with this new thing that doesn't fit into our system and has shown up so quickly and grown so fast that we almost cannot keep up at all with these new sort of innovations taking place in how people interact with professional sports.
Yeah, so let's talk about what makes this different than, you know, what Americans might consider more traditional forms of gambling. The United States, between local governments, state governments, and the federal government, you've got a hodgepodge of laws that govern gambling. And you have places like Las Vegas and Atlantic City where you can go to casinos that are regulated a certain way, and that seems to, you know, have been going on for a while. But then you have different regulations on online gambling, and it seems like only New Jersey and maybe a couple of other states actually allow that to go on. So can you talk about why something like FanDuel and DraftKings, that seems to be all right for now in most states, but something like online poker is not?
Yeah, so online poker has been interpreted by the federal government to be online gambling. And as such, it now falls into all sorts of laws, but it requires some determination of what is and what is not gambling. Typically, that falls to states more often than not to determine what is and is not gambling. Although in some instances, the federal government has stepped in particular with the online poker, and has basically declared that online poker is gambling.
So what they're really trying to do is they're trying to balance the elements of chance versus the elements of skill in various games. And that seems like a tough call, and it could be very subjective. You know, I would say that poker is a skill game in many ways. Yes, your success is based heavily on the cards you're dealt, but there are people who seem to be very successful at that game regardless of the cards they're dealt. And the more you practice and the more you get into the odds, you're going to be a better player regardless of the elements of chance. So how is the federal government really in a position to be deciding that balance? And how does that decision impact the legality of something like DraftKings versus online poker?
Or a state government, for that matter. Anyone? How is anyone, especially in these types of games, that in everything in life requires some elements of luck, chance, and skill? Right? We wake up every day, and things that we do, and our successes and failures are some mix of being in the right place in the right time, but then also being skillful at navigating those situations. So there is this underlying skill versus luck determination, and that really is the ultimate legal test for what is and is not gambling. So in poker, for example, poker was determined to be predominantly luck-based, not skill-based. And that's the argument that's playing out right now with daily fantasy sports, is does it require predominantly skill or luck? What's the overwhelming factor that determines success or failure?
So let's get into that a bit. I think the companies are arguing, because of the way the law is written, that they are games of skill. That because you're not gambling on the outcome of a game, you are picking particular players, and that involves more thought, maybe. What are the arguments for DraftKings and FanDuel being a game of skill? And what are the arguments against it that say that it actually is gambling and it just looks different?
Yeah, so it's also important to remember that the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act of 2006 created what some are calling a loophole for daily fantasy sports. And it laid out some clear guidelines on what fantasy or simulation games had to do or be to fit into that exception. So it couldn't be gambling on or betting on the outcome of one match or game. It had to be multiple matches or games, and there are some other things. So there's clearly a lot of skill in that, being able to select the way that Daily Fantasy Sports requires the best players who will play the best that weekend, but also you want to find those sleeper players, those players that will do the best that not everyone else will select. So like I was saying before, there are differences between season-long and daily fantasy games. In season-long, typically it's a fixed pool of players, and once one player is selected, that player cannot be selected by someone else. So it's almost a zero-sum game in that regard, in that we're all competing for a fixed pie of players. With daily fantasy sports, the same player can be selected by every participant. So the key to success is being able to select those players that will do well that other people are not selecting. And that requires a lot of skill. I think if you and I were to sit down and I were to put some thought into a lineup, let's say for the next slate of NBA games coming up, and you were to just randomly select players, my guess is that I would probably do better than you. And that's because it takes some skill to realize, oh, a player's coming off of a knee injury, or this team has a very good defense that will stop a player from shooting three-pointers or something like this. There has to be some understanding of the game and some knowledge of which players will do well and will not do well in certain contexts.
Now, so it seems like there's kind of a clash of definitions here. So you have the company saying it's a game of skill. And one of the arguments they're making is that such a small percentage of the users actually do well, which is an argument that it's a game of skill. Because if everyone had an equal chance of winning, then that would be an argument that it's gambling. And you see these ads where someone says, I won $10,000 playing FanDuel. I won $100,000, maybe even $1 million playing FanDuel. That's got to represent a really small percentage, whereas most of the people are kind of just throwing in a little bit of money and maybe not doing well.
Yeah, I think those advertisements you see are similar to the diet advertisements, where the sort of implied disclaimer here is results may vary. that not everyone's going to lose 80 pounds on this diet, and not everyone is going to win $10,000 or whatever playing daily fantasy sports. And there was, and that's borne out in the numbers. You look at studies done. There was a study done for half of the Major League Baseball season for 2015, I believe, and what they found was 91% of the winnings were won by 1.3% of the players.
Wow.
And that's clearly, there's not an even distribution. It's clearly concentrated in a few players, very skillful players, players who probably have algorithms and all sorts of other things that help them select the best players each day versus a player that says, oh, I like this guy, or this guy's done well the past couple nights. I'm going to pick him. So there is a great degree of skill, and I think the daily fantasy sports platform's greatest argument that they are skill based is also one argument they aren't putting out there very forcefully, because it's also the greatest threat to the casual player playing. So
right.
You think in 2014, for example, FanDuel went from like less than 200,000 players or something like this to almost a million, I believe. Now my numbers might not be exactly right, but it's pretty darn close to that they experienced something like 300% growth. Or so something crazy in just a matter of months. And that was mostly casual players. So the idea that this is chance is not really found in the data, but that's also something that buyer beware, right? The people playing ought to know that they're getting into a pond with some sharks.
And it seems like the disconnect between the legal arguments they want to be making and their marketing strategy is very pronounced. As you said, if it's a game of skill and only 1.5% of the players or so are really taking all the money, then that's an argument that it's very skill-based and most of the people are not skilled. However, in the marketing, they want to make it seem like the average person can just sign up and make $1 million. And I think that might be one of the issues that is causing enforcement action against them. So, for example, in New York, which has taken a very hardline stance on this, the Attorney General tried to shut it down, then there was an appeal, and now it's currently being litigated, but the sites are continuing to operate. He cited things like most consumers not making money on it as to say that it's kind of a scam. However, that's their best legal argument, that it's a game of skill, not chance, that most people aren't winning. So he's trying to protect consumers from losing money, but at the same time, he's kind of making their argument for them.
This is the fine line that these companies walk, is that they want to go and say, everybody come play because anyone can win. But at the end of the day, the most skilled players are the ones that are most likely to win. And it's interesting the way things are playing out in New York. I think A.G. Schneiderman in New York, the state A.G., is going after them, saying they're sort of selling a bad investment and people are buying into this and they're not getting what they think they should be getting as a return on their investment, and therefore they need to be regulated, if not banned. That's what he's going after, is an outright prohibition on these companies. But if you think about it as just a purely entertainment product, because that's what it is. At the end of the day, this is something people do for fun. People do to make the games they're watching more interesting. And people aren't doing it thinking, oh, I'm going to fund my retirement. Maybe a couple people on the margin might be thinking that way. But those aren't the people that are predominantly playing daily fantasy sports. These are people that say, all right, my season-long fantasy team is in the toilet. No sense playing that anymore. My team, whoever it may be, is no longer in the running for the playoffs, so it's not really fun to watch those games because they just stink. So now this is adding another wrinkle and another way for people to get entertainment out of these games that they might not otherwise get.
Yeah, and there's a big spectrum of users. I mean, you've got guys spending maybe 8-10 hours a day on this as a full-time job, you know, and they have Excel spreadsheets and advanced metrics, and they clearly represent a small minority of the players, and maybe they're the same players that are taking home all the money. But just as well, you and I could set up a weekly head-to-head matchup just for fun. You know, maybe we put $10 on it and the site takes a 20% cut from these transactions, and that's how they make their money. You know, if you and I might get hours of enjoyment out of that $10 the same way you spend these days, it costs $15 to see a movie in the theaters. So what is the role for Congress, you know, government regulators to really be telling people, you know, you're not getting a return on your investment? What if my return on investment is simply a few hours of having a good time watching football?
Exactly. And I think, and you know, this is quite timely, but the people who buy lottery tickets, right? You know, we just had the $1.5 billion
Powerball.
Yeah, the Super Powerball or whatever it was announced last night. And there are people, if you look at it, the net present value of those tickets is below $2. It was something like $1.60. So people, that's a losing proposition for people to buy that that ticket. Although if you think they're going to get at least 30 cents of entertainment out of it, it does make sense for them to buy that ticket. Just in the same way that I might not win the daily fantasy sports game. And if I do, I might only get, you know, I might buy in at $1 and get $1.05 back. But if I'm getting entertainment out of it, you know, it might make it worthwhile for me to do that. And I think the role for to actually answer your question, the role for Congress or state legislators, I think, is to step back and allow people to just choose to purchase the products they want. And then if there are clear market failures, if there are clear issues, if there are clear problems that arise, then you address those. But right now, just outright banning these games because you think, oh, people ought not be doing this because we think they should be spending their money on something else. If you think about it as an entertainment product, it's really no different than someone buying video games or a subscription to Netflix. All that is just a way for them to spend time entertaining themselves through something on a TV screen, which is basically all fantasy sports is really doing, is giving them a way to entertain themselves in a slightly different way than just simply watching the games. So in that regard, Congress really, and local governments and state governments are really in no position to be stepping in at this point, so far as there's no real clear market failure. And it's also important to remember that just because there aren't daily fantasy sports specific regulations does not mean that these platforms go unregulated. There are a number of criminal and civil laws that would cover any sort of fraud, abuse, or mistreatment that would take place within these platforms. So, for example, if the companies make some promises, false promises, to consumers, and consumers are induced into submitting money, playing the games, whatever, and it turns out that they're harmed as a result, they can go to court and seek redress. So there are plenty of opportunities for people to be protected in these platforms. And just because we don't have a daily fantasy sports regulatory board does not mean that these things are not regulated.
Right, and it seems like the basic idea is that instead of banning it outright, what the government should be doing instead is just policing real harms as they come. Right, if there are actual consumer harms that can be proven, then deal with those on a case-by-case basis, but banning something outright is not the right approach. Now let's talk about why people want to ban this, right? Where is the opposition coming from? Is it merely rent-seeking, which is to say that people like Sheldon Adelson, you know, a big-time billionaire casino owner, he doesn't want competition because while the companies are arguing that this is not gambling, it's probably a lot of the same people who might gamble, who might play fantasy sports. You know, people want to put a little money on the line to have some fun. Or is it a morality issue? Is it people who say that gambling is immoral and the government should step in? You know, is it a little bit of both?
It's probably both. So you probably do have established incumbents who see this as eating away at their market share, saying, whoa, please step in and stop this. There's all kinds of harms. Well, what harms? I'm not sure. And here come the people then on that front that say, well, it's people who shouldn't be spending money on this. It's a gateway to more pernicious things, you know. Who knows? People are going to be betting their entire lives on daily fantasy sports and going bankrupt or something. As far as I know, no one has declared bankruptcy because they've spent all their money on a daily fantasy sports platform. Now, even if that does happen, that's really not a good justification for the government to step in and stop people from playing because people are making bad decisions with it. There's no real clear market failure, which is the sole basis for government regulation is a market failure here, and there isn't one. And so I do think it's a blend of both, let's say, the bootleggers, that is the established incumbents, and the Baptists, that is those people who have a moral justification for banning it. And they sort of create an unholy alliance in which you have people who are making both a moral and a self-interested argument for regulating. I think what's really driving this in particular are, it seems, two groups. One, state attorneys general seem to be coming after this very hard.
You can make some big headlines doing this kind of work, as the New York attorney general has become arguably a national figure over his very radical decision to try to shut down both platforms entirely, both of which, correct me if I'm wrong, have offices or were founded in New York.
Yeah, so I believe FanDuel is, their offices are in New York. DraftKings is actually based in Boston, although it's interesting to see the difference between the way the Massachusetts AG approached this and say, I'm going to take a wait and see approach and maybe step in if something actually
does happen.
Regulatory
humility, as we call it at Tech Freedom.
Exactly, versus the AG in Illinois or the AG in New York that steps in and says, no, absolutely not. Right. There's a clear difference between this. I think also in Delaware, for example, the AG was asked to weigh in by the state legislature, and the response of the AG was something like, the law is unclear, and I will not take a position until the law is cleared up. So to put the ball in the legislature's court and say, do something. I'm not simply going to act because you want me to act. If you want me to act, pass a law, and I will enforce the law. Which is, I think, just another example of the different approaches that state AGs have taken, which I think have been the most aggressive group on this. The other ones you're seeing that have been aggressive on this, so, perhaps not surprising, are the gaming commissions, the gaming board. So the Nevada gaming board basically woke up one morning and said, we've redefined daily fantasy sports to be gambling, and now you must get licensed and be regulated by us if you want to continue to operate in the state. So ostensibly, daily fantasy sports is banned. as of, you know, the Nevada Gaming Commission's
Isn't it ironic that in the state where Las Vegas, the adult playground where you can gamble away your entire life savings at a blackjack table and no one says anything, but you can't log onto a computer and play DraftKings or FanDuel? I'd say that's pretty ironic. So insider trading, that's an issue that came up because an employee of one of the companies was using the other platform. And the argument was that they had access to insider information, which made them more likely to win than the average user. Can you get into that a little bit?
Sure. So it was billed as insider trading. But it's important to remember that insider trading is something a little slightly different. All the headlines said, you know, insider trading in daily fantasy sports. Like, right. They were very serious and they made it seem like a crime had been committed.
Right.
Now, it's unsure whether or not a crime actually had been committed per se. But if in fact there was, if what the allegation was, and that was that an employee of one of these companies used information to play a game on the other company's platform and win something like $350,000 or something like this. If that's true, then there may be an argument for fraud, but there certainly isn't a crime here that's been committed as far as I know. I could be wrong on that. But basically what had happened was, and this is something I mentioned earlier, is that in daily fantasy sports, there's not a fixed pie of players. That is, you know, if you draft Tom Brady or Rob Gronkowski or whoever, I can also do that in daily right. fantasy sports. So the key isn't just to draft the best players. The key is to draft the best players that no one else is drafting.
Right, the sleepers, the ones who overperform, or that you know, you're gonna take a chance on someone who's maybe the fewer people who pick them and the better he does, the better for you, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the allegation here was that an employee of one of the platforms who had access to the data that said how often players were being drafted on that company's platform used that data to then play games on the other company's platform. The idea here being presumably that the draft frequencies, that is how often players were drafted, are similar on both platforms, and therefore he could use that to get an upper hand.
Right, and it's
everyone else.
It's worth noting that the policy before the scandal that I think both companies had is that if you're an employee of DraftKings, you cannot use DraftKings because there's a clear conflict of interest there. However, go ahead and play FanDuel, our competitor, and they were encouraged to do that. And it's not crazy to think that because these companies were founded by people who like fantasy sports, and the companies wanted to encourage their employees to play fantasy sports, even if that meant playing a different platform. Now, in the wake of the scandal, you know, quote unquote, you could say that wasn't much of a scandal at all, but the companies took a preemptive strike and just said, you know what, not anymore. You can't play this at all. If you're an employee of DraftKings, you can't play FanDuel and vice versa, because there's just, this is too hot an issue and we're getting too much flack for this.
Exactly. And I think there was an internal probe that was done after an internal investigation that found that while the employee did have access, it was not used.
Right.
So it turns out to really be a non-controversy, but this is what put daily fantasy sports in the crosshairs, if you will, of state AGs. So it was after that the New York Attorney General then sent a letter of inquiry to DraftKings and FanDuel saying, I'd like to ask you a few questions about your platforms. It was also at this time when other AGs and legislators and other interested policymakers began to take an interest in what was going on in these platforms. And that, in a nutshell, if that was occurring, I mean, there's some serious potential fraud claims going on here if something like this was in fact occurring, but it doesn't certainly seem to rise to the level of needing to heavily regulate these companies or even to prohibit these companies. And could be something where these problems could simply be solved by allowing competition to continue to flourish.
So yeah, you've got DraftKings and FanDuel, and they have a lot of money and clout, and partly because they have big name investors in them, which include not only the leagues themselves, the four major American sports, the National Hockey League, the National Basketball Association, Major League Baseball, and the National Football League, but you also have individual teams within those leagues that have major investments in these companies. So if the government is going to go on a regulatory spree or a big effort against them, those companies would probably be in the best position to weather that storm.
The best place, I'm biased, but the best place to keep up on this is fantasysports.mercatus.org, where Eli Dorado and I are keeping an up-to-date map exactly of where everything is playing out in each state and in what's happening.
This has really become a big national debate, and I wouldn't even be surprised to see it rearing its head in the election. And there's really a couple of ways to think about this. You know, you see the rise of DraftKings and FanDuel, and you might say, hey, that's no different than gambling. That should also be illegal. Or you might say, hey, if that's okay, why shouldn't anything be okay? Why shouldn't I be able to spend my money online playing poker? Why shouldn't I be able to use an online slot machine? You know, they're really, you might just say, hey, it's my money. I want to spend it and I'm going to be entertained and it's none of your business, the government, to tell me how to do that. Well, that's it for today's show. My guest has been Chris Koopman, a research fellow at the Mercatus Center, a university-based research center. And we've been talking DraftKings, FanDuel, and the wonderful world of fantasy sports, which has somehow gotten really controversial. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit, tax-exempt think tank based in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work in tech policy and for more episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.